Hi, this is Nancy Gift, and I'm with Joan Pauley, and we are doing a new WBER show called People, Profit, and Planet. Joan, what's that all about?
Well, actually, a lot of corporations in the past have just focused on one bottom line, which is profit. And so, thankfully, the trend in those responsible ethical corporations is to focus on what they call the triple bottom line, which is focused not just on profit, but people and planet and profit and the interplay of all three.
Yeah.
Now here at Berea, we also have something that's called the triple bottom line, but what we describe it as the interplay between social justice, environmental integrity, and economic well-being.
People, profit, planet,
exactly.
Just translated with different words.
Exactly.
So we figured that people, profit, and planet with the P's sounded a little bit more radio-like. So that's a translation of sustainability at Berea College, which
that's
is
right.
What the show will be about. And as a low-ball, easy start for us, I thought we'd begin by talking about lawn care because it's one of my favorite subjects and because Joan has some good plans for lawn care in Berea that you'll be hearing about a little later in the show. So let's start. Joan, you want to shoot me some questions?
Sure. As Nancy referred to, we're going to be launching a dandelion festival. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But in the research for this, I was able to meet with some folks on campus, and I've been fascinated by the history, the evolution of lawns, and what used to be, especially in the Appalachia region, and the evolution to where we are today. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So lawns initially were just the space in front of your house, and people tried to keep it clean, actually swept lawns, mm-hmm. because that kept the vermin out. You mm-hmm. didn't want mice or whatever in your lawn area, and you were just trying to keep your yard clear. There might have been a kitchen garden a little further away from the house, but the idea of what was in front of your house was just bare.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became kind of a class issue. So people looking at really nice estates in Europe especially noticed that there would often be some flat green space in front. And so we started, upper class people started creating lawns that were all grass and mowed neatly. And this wasn't even used for pasture. And this was sort of a class thing that you had enough land to use some of it to just be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And so the size of these lawns has gotten larger. And, of course, around central Kentucky, you'll see these massive, like, 5-acre front lawns with all grass.
Right.
You know, big estate up on the hillside. And that was considered kind of a mark of how good you were.
Mm.
And then when we started building suburbs, they continued that look because that was sort of what made it clear that these people were not gardeners, they were not chicken keepers, they were not just regular people living on a street. These were well-off people who had some extra land that they could just make into a lawn. So that was part of the class issue. Another really important bit about lawns, though, is that we used to tolerate and encourage them to be a little more diverse than just grass. And the earliest lawn seed mixes had clover in them. As part of the mix, because clover's low-growing, it's green year-round, and it helps fertilize the grass with the nodules, the nitrogen-fixing nodules in the clover roots. And the clover was part of our lawn seed mixes until around World War II, when the herbicide 2,4-D was introduced. And 2,4-D is a really interesting herbicide because it kills dandelions and doesn't kill grass. But it also turns out that 2,4-D kills clover. And so the only way they could sell 2,4-D was to tell people that clover was bad.
And what year was this? What time frame?
I'm horrible.
Right after. Was it past? Long time past World War II?
No, it was right around World War II.
Okay.
I want to say 1946, but I'm horrible with years. I forgot to tell you. Never ask me years on the radio.
just general time. Frame.
General time frame.
Got it.
Yeah. Grandpa time.
Yeah, there you go.
Time.
There you go.
That's all good. So anyway, that was sort of the history. And then it's come from there as the herbicides have developed further. But interestingly, if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever and you're trying to buy herbicides for your lawn, actually the number one ingredient in most home purchase lawn care products is 2,4-D.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is with our, I think it's reached a tipping point where the awareness around sustainable foods and local foods, it's reached a tipping point. So I find it interesting that in our land codes now, if someone wants to have a front garden, the land development codes don't allow that.
Yeah.
And so they're having to, there's a neighborhood resurgence for the desire to grow food.
Yes.
In the front lawns and how that's pitting neighbor against neighbor in some cases, but it's going to be an interesting thing to see how accepting we are to go back to our traditional use of our lawns. It's fascinating.
Right. I think the lawn codes are particularly difficult to fight because they're often different from city to city.
Right.
For example, in my township in Pennsylvania, there were four plants that were illegal, and one was multiflora rose, one was marijuana, one was Johnson grass, and one was chicory.
Oh, my goodness.
And chicory is just this lovely little blue plant. The only thing you might say about it that would be a good reason for it to be illegal is because it's got a really tough stalk that's hard to mow. But it was a coffee substitute. The leaves are edible. So it's this lovely little plant, and it got stuck here on the outlaw list for O'Hara Township, Pennsylvania. So,
well, why? Tell me why it's important to have not just grass. What is the... For those that are novice, like myself,
right.
If I was explaining to someone why it's okay to have some dandelions in the yard,
right?
Tell me why that is. Why is it okay?
So the big picture is that there's no monoculture in nature. And so a grass lawn that's all grass is a monoculture. And you'll find little patches of monoculture in nature. But it's really unrealistic to expect nothing new to grow in a space where you've got just this one little low-growing wussy plant, grass. So that doesn't work ecologically. And the only way to make it work is to apply a lot of pesticides. And even though farmers are often what we think about when we think about organic, so lots of people buy organic food and they're really thinking about farmers and what they do. And of course, farmers control a lot of land. But homeowners who spray their lawns spray 10 to 15 times the rates of pesticides that farmers do.
Wow. Because they just don't know?
Because they don't know, but also because they don't care about profit. So
right.
A farmer actually is going to stop spraying at the point when enough weeds are dead that they'll make their corn crop. But a homeowner wants every last fracking dandelion. And that is our swear word for the show. So they want every single one of those dandelions. And the only way to get that is to spray more pesticide than would normally be used.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's a battle against nature to make your lawn that way.
Right. And that's because of the evolution of that equates to a higher class. So it's... maybe we need to have a dandelion support group so the neighbors could come together and say,
yes,
it's okay. You know, we're not bad people.
Right.
Because really, I mean, it's hard to know. It's a science.
Mm-hmm.
And so most homeowners just want a pretty lawn.
They do. They want to feel like they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
They want to
feel
like they're making their neighbors happy.
Absolutely.
So one of the things when I wrote a book called A Weed by Any Other Name for Beacon Press back in 2007. And one of the reactions that I've particularly liked when I gave talks about that book to garden club ladies is that they would say, I no longer feel guilty about the fact that I don't spray my lawn.
Right.
And of course, I'd love to convert more people to not spraying their lawns, but even to get those people who don't spray them to be willing to talk about it, to say, I have a biodiverse lawn, instead of saying, I have a weedy lawn.
Right.
And then they have something to feel good about instead of something to feel guilty about.
Yeah. So in the end, it's always about education.
It is.
Really. Because the other piece of this, if you're comfortable talking about it, is the fertilizer that it takes to get a beautiful lawn and the downstream impacts of what's happening with that that we don't see here in Kentucky, but certainly at the in the Gulf Coast, they're seeing it.
Absolutely, right. So those fertilizers, when they wash off the lawn, because they will, I know they have slow release, and I know that, you know, if you're doing it properly, not as much will wash off. And the fertilizer travels off the lawn. It ends up in the water, usually through when it rains, it ends up in the water, and then it travels to the Kentucky River and then the Ohio River, which has plenty of gunk in it already from having gone through Pittsburgh, I can tell you, and then it ends up in the Mississippi. And when it ends up in the Mississippi and then the Gulf of Mexico, what happens is that the nutrients in the water, they fertilize algae, basically. And the algae grow like crazy because they're not used to that much nutrient. The Mississippi River water isn't really supposed to have many nutrients in it. And so when the algae get fertilized like that, they grow. But then when they die, which they will, they sink. And as they sink, the decomposition of those algae causes the oxygen in the water to get used up. The bacteria are respiring. And so then there's no oxygen available in the water for the fish and the crawdads and all that other yummy stuff that we like to eat out of the Gulf of Mexico. So it ends up being a downstream problem that we don't think about when we're trying to make our lawn look green.
Right.
It's a crazy process.
It really is. And but since we're People Planet Profit, we're going to talk about how we can have beautiful lawns more sustainably.
Right.
You know.
So what the good option is. And
yeah.
So the good option is partly to keep your lawn a little bit higher, partly because that helps keep out the weeds. So if you grow your lawn at like 3 or 4 inches, or grow a garden in your front lawn, so you're not even tempted to spray the herbicides at all. So there are lots of good other ways to do your lawn. And fertilizer is generally not necessary. You know, obviously you get a little bit of extra green, but the other thing that happens when you fertilize is in midsummer, if we get a drought, then the plants have these really big roots and these big tops, and then they're not ready for drought. So your lawn will actually weather difficult weather conditions better if it hasn't been fertilized. So instead of fertilizer, you can mulch the leaves into your lawn. You can deliberately plant clover seed. And there's nothing more rebellious feeling than running around your front lawn with a packet of seed that isn't, you think, supposed to be in your lawn and tossing it merrily as you go.
So radical.
Radical lawn care is tossing the clover out front.
Right.
And that's really fun.
Yeah.
So I try to focus more on that fun part, which is that you end up with more insects, more beautiful insects. You have the clover and butterflies like that and bees like that, and so you end up with this lawn that you really feel safe about sticking your kid down in or your grandkid in that lawn and just letting them sit and soak it up and, you know, make daisy chains like we used to when we were kids, right?
Right. Well, that's, I mean, I think it's complicated, you know, if it, and knowing where to go to get information, because if you read labels standing in Home Depot or Lowe's and you're not a scientist or a chemist or an environmentalist, you know, how, unless I took you to the store, Nancy, I would be totally confused.
Right, because now people get most of their information from the store.
That's
or
right.
Or they do a quick Google search and they're like, how do I get rid of the weeds in my lawn? And frankly, that's the wrong question.
Right.
So you can't get the right answer if you're asking
that's
the wrong
question. Right. So to that point, one of the things we really want to do here, we are a college. We're here to educate. And so when we were having a discussion around this, we came up with the idea of having some fun with it and learning in the process. So we're going to be launching the very first Dandelion Festival at Berea ever.
April 16th.
That's right, April 16th, and we're going to hope that the dandelions are cooperating and they're up and doing what they're supposed to be doing so we can celebrate them.
Yes.
And, of course, the dandelions are a metaphor for the bigger issue.
But they were a food, right?
Yes, and Tell me about that too. I was fascinated, yeah. especially in this region. It was a really important weed to many people. So tell me about that.
It was. So one of the jokes I like to make about dandelions is that they have all three major food groups, liquor, coffee, and greens. You can make wine from the dandelion blooms. You can make coffee substitute from the dandelion roots, no caffeine included, I'm sorry. But at least it'll get you that bitter wake-up start to the day. And then the greens, which are highly nutritious and very tasty with a little bit of bacon grease.
Yum.
So,
yum.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, part of the Dandelion Festival, we're in the big planning stages, and one of my labor students, Shelby Wheeler, who is our sustainable foods coordinator, will be spearheading this. But we plan to have workshops in the morning so that some of the things we've touched on today, we're going to go a little deeper, have a deeper dive.
That sounds great.
So that we can educate homeowners, we can educate landowners in general about how we can strike a balance between a scorched earth policy and having some variation. So we'll have workshops in the morning.
Yeah.
And then we're really going to have a festival.
It'll be time to eat. Eat, drink, and be merry.
Exactly. So we'll have a cooking contest using dandelions. We're going to figure out how to have other contests with dandelions. We'll have booths. Yeah. We'll have a lot of fun. So, and music. And we're shutting the street off in front of the square. So,
oh, that'll be great.
So, yeah. So we'll really have some celebration. And start hopefully this will be the kickoff for a lot of conversations, a lot of additional workshops, so that it's not just a one-time workshop, but also how people that really want to do things more sustainably, a resource, they can think of the resource between you and between the Office of Sustainability here on campus.
Right. So Berea will be a resource,
exactly.
both for our students and staff, but the community in a larger sense, too.
Exactly. And who knows, there might be dandelion festivals all over the country after this as a way to just slow down what we always do and rethink things.
Yes.
So that's the hope, is that we'll educate, but we'll also have a whole lot of fun in the process.
Yeah. No, I think that'll be great. And it'll be a wonderful alternative to what many of the communities in Eastern Kentucky do with festivals. Festivals celebrating black rocks that people die for. Well,
yes.
You know, let's celebrate something that feeds people and makes them happy and is a resource in rough times.
Right.
I know a lot of our listeners are probably fans of the Hunger Games. And, of course, the dandelion was Katniss's symbol, that she knew she could make it in those rough times in the Hunger Games. And that became the symbol of her love for her friend PETA, too. So that was a really neat moment in that series.
So do you have any favorite dandelion recipes?
Well, my favorite is one that I've only made once, which is the dandelion wine. And the start of making dandelion wine is that you have to gather a gallon of blooms on a dry day. And, you know, everybody thinks that dandelions bloom all the time. And they can. I mean, you'll see dandelion blooms in random times of year all year. But the fact is that there's one big flush of dandelions. And if you went out today at the end of October and you tried to gather a gallon of dandelions, you would be gone a long time. So you have to wait for that big flush of dandelions to gather that gallon of blooms. And then it sits, this was an old Ewell Gibbons recipe. He wrote a book called Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
Oh, wow.
And it's a great 1960s book about how he and his family lived on weeds during the Great Depression.
Oh,
and he would
gosh.
Go out foraging for their family. And the rumor is that he died of stomach cancer, but I think that's from some of his other recipes than the dandelions. But anyway, it's like you gather the gallon of blooms and you soak it under yeast on a piece of toasted rye bread a week, and then you filter, and it's really complicated. And there is enough sugar in that to give instant diabetic shock. And there are some oranges. So it's got a nice flavor. And a British friend of mine who was a great drinker, she said that it tasted like cheap sherry, and cheap sherry was one of her favorite drinks.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm sure that there are better ways of making dandelion wine than I did. But,
well, I was in Canada a few months ago in Calgary, and we were doing a local food walk tour, and lo and behold, they brought out, we stopped at a place that served wine, and lo and behold, they pulled out the dandelion wine that they had.
Nice.
It was the local, that's what they had locally, so they used whatever they could have locally. So yeah. it was delicious, and mm-hmm. you know, maybe we could put Boone Tavern on the spot right here, right now, and see if they'll do a dandelion wine tasting for us during the festival.
Well, and I know people have asked Sean Clark about why at the College Farm we don't grow grapes and have a winery, mm-hmm. and the reality is that grapes in Kentucky are almost impossible to grow without pesticides. They mm-hmm. need a lot of fungicides, and so it'd be a pretty intensive process, and mm-hmm. we're mostly organic on the College Farm. So we can't do that. Yeah. We maybe could do an orchard with a hard cider, but dandelion wine, we've got that. We've got those things. And they are really easy to grow organically, I hear.
Right.
So, I mean,
exactly.
It's a great bonus.
Exactly. Well, I know Chris Green with the Appalachia Center is going to participate with us, and he's going to have an event during that week where we're going to have dandelion recipes. Dining Services is also going to get involved with us, and
nice.
they're scoping out, just like you said, dandelions don't bloom all the time, so
right.
how are they going to get enough dandelions? So they're talking with Janet at the gardens now to
great.
Say, can we collaborate so we can have
yeah.
something to serve to celebrate
yeah.
that as well? So it's going to be exciting to see what all people come up with in terms of recipes.
It will be. And I know we've got a lot of good cooks in the area, and I know we have some traditional cooks as well. And
yes.
the combination should make some really nice celebration of Appalachia past and present. And, you know, I think the other neat thing with the Dandelion Festival is that it can incorporate so many other historic practices
right.
from Appalachian lawns. So, you know, even the chicken keeping, you know, chickens
yeah.
we in our backyard, we have some chickens, and when we keep the coop over a certain area for a while, they pretty much strip it bare, and you know, we can replant whatever we want, but of course the chickens like the weeds just fine.
Yeah.
And one of the fun things I saw when I first came to Berea was watching the pigs get released into a new cornfield here at the College Farm, and
yeah.
they go straight for the weeds.
Yeah.
I mean, they like corn, it's really high energy and everything, but,
yeah.
but those weeds are really tasty.
Wow.
And they know what's good for them.
Right. Wow.
So.
Well, I think
yeah.
we're just
probably
about
at the end of our time, and so it was really nice having you all here
yeah,
with us for our
yeah.
little conversation about dandelions and lawn weeds,
right.
and we hope you'll join us next time for
right.
our next installment of People, Profit, and Planet.